That's fantastic. Well, Melanie Rubin, National Director of Disaster Relief for Acupuncturists Without Borders and Associate Director, I want to thank you so much for the work that you're doing and bringing acupuncture to the people of the world who really are suffering. And thanks for being on Health Watch today.
Thank you so much, Ellen. And thank you for all you're doing.
You're welcome. We've been speaking with Melanie Rubin, Associate Director of Acupuncturists Without Borders and the Director of National Disaster Relief. She's quite busy these days. I'm Ellen Goldsmith, licensed acupuncturist, your host. I want you to tune in next month on Monday, October 2nd, when I speak with Jennifer Bray on her film Unrest, which is a virtual journey to document her story as she fights ME, myalgic encephalitis, a disease that medicine forgot. You can listen to this episode and more episodes of Health Watch online at kboo.org/healthwatch.
Have you received your KBOO Silent Drive letter in the mail? Here's your chance to support your favorite community radio station and enter a chance to win some fabulous prizes. No letter? No worries. Go to kboo.fm to find out more about what you could win when you donate to KBOO between now and September 14th. Here's a teaser. The grand prize is a 3-day, 2-night stay at El Dorado Resort and Casino with airfare in the biggest little city in the world. Yes, that's Reno, Nevada. The first prize is a night out on Burnside with a night at the Jupiter Hotel, with dinner at Le Pigeon, drinks at Cider Riot, and breakfast at Grendel, so you can dive deep into the Burnside nightlife. And our second prize will allow you to stock up on medicinal and recreational treats at Jane PDX. Go to kboo.fm to donate. When we come together, we build our community's resilience, and there's no better time to invest in KBOO than now.
The Rafiki Village Project is a nonprofit that was started in 2016. And the purpose of it is to help a particular village in Tanzania with their infrastructure, particularly their primary school and their medical health clinic.
That sounds really interesting. I know that you're the founder, and I'm wondering what your involvement is specifically, and how did the Rafiki Village Project come about?
Well, I was traveling in Tanzania as a tourist in 2016 with my son, and we were visiting a rural area on a cultural safari, and we visited the village of Gajega, and we saw the condition of the primary school and realized that with not an excessive amount of money, the school could be renovated and the conditions there could be greatly improved. So that was the initial idea, was to help just the primary school. And I came back to Oregon and set about figuring out how to start a nonprofit, which I had never done before.
Wow, yeah. So what kind of conditions did you find the schools in when you visited initially?
Well, the primary school has about 450 students, essentially the same thing as a K through 8 school. It has seven classrooms, which aren't really enough. And the conditions of the classrooms themselves were in very bad shape. There was windows with lots of broken glass. The walls were in very bad shape. The floors had huge holes in them. In some cases, the roof was leaking so that when it rains, water comes through.
So I'm also wondering, like, given that the schools were in such poor condition, like, why was that the case? Was it not a priority to the Tanzanian government, or do they not have enough money to fund things like that? Why was the situation like that?
Well, Tanzania relatively recently passed a mandatory education for K through 8. The government has a sort of commitment to each primary school in the country, and there are literally thousands of primary schools there, just as there are here. But there's really not enough money to fund all those schools. And I think the priority is to actually pay teachers' salaries. So there are teachers in each of the schools, but there really isn't a whole lot more money that the government has to pay for the schools. So the upkeep of the schools and materials and supplies for the school are almost non-existent.
Yeah, it sounds like the condition is really a huge obstacle to student learning. What kind of things do you think that school system would aspire to if they did have, you know, the financial resources to have better schools and more supplies and whatnot?
I think in terms of the teachers and the head teacher, they would love to have, you know, classrooms that were, you know, in better condition and more supplies. And, you know, the teachers, have an education, and they realize that what they're up against. And parents, too. I think parents also realize that their children's school is in awful shape.
Well, earlier you spoke about the impact of the poor condition of the school on student learning, but I think we have to take it a step backward.
Sure.
The impact also has to do with attendance, because Tanzania is a culture that's in transition, and the particular area where the Gijega school is located is an area where mainly people are subsistence farmers and pastoralists, meaning that they traditionally have moved from place to place with their animals, looking for pasture and moisture and a way to survive. So attending school has not been part of that long-term tradition or culture. So now there's mandatory education, but the schools, in a way, have to convince families to send their kids to school, even though there's the law of compulsory education. Making the schools be attractive and safe and comfortable, have resources for the kids and the community, is a way of getting families to consider sending their kids in the first place.
That brings a really interesting perspective that I really wouldn't have thought of. I guess that must present a whole different set of challenges than in a culture where people tend to be more stationary.
So the second large project that we did was the renovation of half the classrooms at the school. So we had enough money this year to renovate one classroom block, which contained three classrooms. And we went back and we saw the renovated classrooms, and they're beautiful, and transformation from the old dilapidated classrooms to the bright new and freshly painted ones. It's really amazing. It was really exciting to see. But unfortunately, there's still four classrooms in the school that haven't been renovated. So we're hoping to be able to do that sometime in the not too distant future. And it's not too surprising that the students that are in the unrenovated classrooms are wondering when their turn is coming. And the teachers are probably wondering the same thing. The students at Gijega Primary School, I think, as we said, come from families that are very poor. And as a result, the students typically only get one meal a day. That's typically an evening meal. So and it usually consists of maize, beans, and rice. And occasional, maybe some meat. But they don't typically get breakfast, and they certainly don't get lunch. So the students are coming to school in the morning, in most cases having walked at least several miles, and are trying to learn on an empty stomach. So the school is trying to implement a school lunch program, and they've actually started to do that, and they've tried to get some food from the parents, even though the parents are extremely poor. In some cases, they are able to donate some beans and rice so that they're able to provide some food from the students. But the school really needs a kitchen. So that's very high on the community's wish list, is for us to build a kitchen at the school so the school lunch program can be expanded. Another project that's currently underway is that the teachers, and there's 9 teachers at the school, we're all sharing one pit toilet, which is not even a pit toilet in very good condition. And the teachers who have running water in, for most cases, in their homes, would like to have a real toilet. And it seems like, you know, it's just a matter of, partially just a matter of professional pride, you know, having to use a pit toilet without any running water, no way to wash their hands, is a really a bad situation for them. So we're actually, and it's probably actually already been completed, it was well underway when we were there, we're installing a modern toilet for the teachers.
The Rafiki Village Project is one example of Western assistance, but in a general sense, how can Westerners assist with education in Tanzania?
Well, I think primarily by contributing funds. I mean, I think that a mistake that people that have worked on development in the past has made is by sort of coming up with our own sense, our own ideas of what's going to help economically disadvantaged people. And so I think that, you know, by donating funds and letting the local people decide how to use those funds is really the primary role of the Rafiki Village Project, and in my opinion should be the role of other development organizations.
Why is that different? Why do you think that contributing funds tends to be more successful than initiating projects?
First of all, because of local buy-in. I mean, if you want a project to be successful, it has to be a project that the community itself is interested in. So if you try to do a project without having a lot of buy-in from the local community, it's sort of a recipe for failure. And I think that's the primary reason. If you want the project to be sustainable, what you have to ask yourself, what's going to happen when the donor leaves? And if there's not a lot of community involvement from this beginning, there's no structure and there's no sense of ownership locally.
So in terms of your nonprofit, the Rafiki Village Project, do you get the sense that the community there is invested and that there is a lot of local buy-in?
Absolutely. And that's really been our model from the start. When I returned to the United States, I was able to communicate with people locally about what their priorities were. I expected that the priority would be maybe renovating the classrooms or buying books. I didn't really know. But what I found out was that the priority was actually that the school didn't have any water. And that was making it such a situation where students were going to have to travel to fetch water every day. And the water they were fetching was contaminated water. And that's what the students were drinking. And they didn't have any water for hand washing. And
I just wanted to say, to make this more vivid, since this is radio, we can't show you the pictures of these places, but what we're talking about is very young children walking on foot to a stream and collecting water in big buckets, carrying it usually on their heads the mile and a half back to the school with this contaminated water, and that's really all they had.
So what the teachers and the headmaster at the school asked the Rafiki Village Project to do for our first project was to help them finance the building of a pipeline, which would enable them to sort of to connect to the public water supply, which is about 2.5 miles away. There was a government water tank. The school and the villagers had wanted to connect to that for years, but they just didn't have the money to pay for the pipeline. So that was our initial project. To finance the building of that pipeline. And the villagers themselves actually dug the ditch that the pipe went in, and they supplied pretty much all the labor. The only thing that we had to do was pay for the materials and pay for an engineer to design it so it would work correctly.
Wow, so was that successful?
Absolutely. The project not only brought water to the school, which was, but they also have a tap that the villagers themselves can use. So that not only does the school now have water, but the villagers actually have fresh water in their homes. So they go to the tap, they fill up their buckets, and they can bring it back to their home. So even though they don't have running water in their home, they do have safe drinking water. So we built a pipeline, but unfortunately the public water supply is not on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's sort of turned on and off because the water supply is shared with other villages. So the community wanted us to put in some holding tanks so that when the water is on, they can store water and be able to use it whenever it's needed. So we put in a 5,000 liter tank at the school, another one at the dispensary, and a third one for the community to use. So that's been another project we've done.
That kind of leads me to something else I was curious about. I'm just speculating here, but probably having no source of water except water that's highly contaminated would present major health risks. And I was wondering if you found like healthcare to also be a source of concern in the village, and what your thoughts about that as president of the Rafiki Village Project are.
So on my second visit to Tanzania, which was in October of last year, I visited the local health clinic. So sort of in a similar situation to the schools, the government also mandates that each village has a dispensary, which is what we think of as a medical clinic. And I visited the clinic, and even though they have very dedicated staff, they have a doctor and they have a nurse, they have almost no ability to provide health care because they have very, very few medications. The government does provide, you know, a few things, but not much. And as a consequence, you know, access to health care is very limited for the people in the village. And that's also sort of the second arm of what we're doing, is helping improve the health care by helping this dispensary.
So you've said a lot about like the concrete things that you're doing in terms of the schools, but what kind of concrete projects or concrete ideas do you have about the clinic?
Well, the situation is that there is no housing for the doctor and for the nurse. And as a consequence, they live in the neighboring town, which even though it's only probably 8 or 9 miles away, the roads are so bad that neither of them have a car. They have to get to the clinic on foot. Most days that works, but they mean the clinic can only be open a few hours because they have to return home at the end of the day. But in bad weather during the rainy season, the clinic can be closed for weeks at a time. So the government started to build housing on site for the doctor and nurse a number of years ago, but it was never finished due to lack of funds. So the village and the clinic is asking is the Rafiki Village Project to do is to finish that housing so the doctor and nurse can live on site and the clinic can be open basically 24 hours a day.
And I think we also have brought running water to the clinic. Yes. So this was a clinic that had no running water like the school, and now there is water. In fact, there's an indoor sink that the doctor and nurse can wash hands in, which was non-existent before.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a major improvement.
Absolutely. You're trying to imagine running a health clinic without running water, it's sort of boggles the imagination.
Yeah, it sounds like a daunting task. You also said that they didn't really have much of a supply of medication. Is that something that you're providing as well, or is that not part of the work of the Rafiki Village Project?
No, absolutely. So we're currently giving the clinic quarterly discretionary fund. And what happens is we send the money. The doctor and nurse sort of sit down and figure out what the clinic needs, and they purchase the medications locally in Tanzania because medicines are available in Tanzania, and then they send us the receipts for what they've purchased so that we know that the money actually is being used for healthcare. So we're doing that 4 times a year, and we're actually getting back to the school. Now we are starting a similar project with the school, so we're going to have a discretionary fund for the school where they will actually figure out what to do with the money. And probably what they're going to do the first is that they have desks that are basically falling apart, and some of the desks are going to be replaced with the first money that we send.
So it sounds like from an effectiveness standpoint, the Rafiki Village Project is doing really well. But I'm also kind of wondering about the political implications about being Westerners, being Americans, and doing this kind of nonprofit work in rural Tanzania. And I was wondering if you could, either if you could speak about how you feel about that and kind of like what your political ideas are about this.
I mean, it's sort of a sense of obligation to try to make the world a better place. You know, each of us only gets one life, and if we can choose how to do what to do with it. And I just think that if we try to do what we can to make the world a better place, if we each did our own part, the world would be a better place. So you know, that's sort of one reason. You know, I think we have sort of as Westerners, a special obligation to Africa in general, because you know, we have a great deal of affluence in this society, and there's a lot of economic justice here, injustice here at home. All in all, we have it. There's a great deal of more prosperity here, and the prosperity that we have here at home is actually connected to the poverty that exists in Tanzania, and by that I mean. You know, I'm not an economist, but you know, my understanding of you know how we have become such a wealthy society has to do with over centuries the accumulation of wealth. And even though I'm hesitant to use the word imperialism, that's really what I'm talking about. The extraction of resources from Africa over centuries. And we're talking about just both human resources, namely slavery, and also mineral resources, have really helped make us prosper here. Prosperity that we have here in the United States is directly related to the prosperity, to the economic hardships in Tanzania. So I think we have an obligation here to sort of do what we can to reverse some of that so that the money's sort of flowing in the other direction.
So you have kind of like an economic justice ethos behind the project?
Exactly.
Well, there's something that maybe listeners have noticed as a theme, and I think maybe this is the place to mention this, which is this situation whereby the national government builds projects that are left incomplete, for such as the David mentioned that there's a water tank 2.5 miles from Gajega School, but no pipeline to connect it, or that there's unfinished doctor and nurse staff housing at the clinic and unfinished housing for the headmaster at the school. And it may raise questions for the listeners. It certainly raised questions for me. And I was recently with David in Tanzania in June of this year, and we had the opportunity to meet with some local government officials over there. And one of the things that they clarified for us is that it's actually by policy that the national government idealistically wants to partner with the local villages, and they deliberately do approximately 80% of a project with the thought that the village will do the rest, add the pipeline or complete the last touches of the housing. But all over the country you see these uncompleted projects, because although that's the intention, the local communities are so impoverished that there's really no chance. And so, in a sense, the Rafiki Village Project is picking up on some of the village obligation to complete what is really a national movement towards universal education and universal health care, which are things that we value highly and want to support in a broader sense.
In fact, the government is actually acknowledging that we're doing that. And we met with government officials on this last trip to Tanzania and the previous trip to Tanzania. And they're basically acknowledging that we're doing their work for them. And they've said so in so many words and thanking us for sort of stepping in and helping where they're not really able to help. So we're actually, as we move forward, looking at sort of partnering with the Tanzanian government. So, for instance, there's a proposal on the table that the government will pay for 50% of the completion of the housing for the doctor and nurse, and that the Rafiki Village Project would pay the other 50%.
Awesome. That does a lot to answer my question. But then, at the same time, I'm still wondering, why not work on something closer to home?
Well, that sort of gets to the what I was getting to before about economic justice, and you know that economic justice requires a transfer of wealth from economically advantaged and privileged communities to ones that are economically disadvantaged. And I think KBOO listeners know we have a lot of economic inequalities and injustice here at home. But it's in my opinion, it's partially it's a matter of scale. And as if we look at things like sort of, you know, health statistics like infant mortality and life expectancy and doctors per capita and the chance of dying before the age of five and maternal mortality. All those things, even in the poorest communities in the United States, are much greater than they are in Tanzania. For instance, the chance of dying during childbirth in Tanzania, there's 460 maternal deaths per 100,000. In the United States, it's 21. And then in some, a lot of European countries, it's like 2 or 3 per 100,000. Even the poorest communities in the United States have some access to health care, but that's not necessarily true in Tanzania.
I know I saw on your Facebook page that you guys have an exciting event coming up. I was wondering if you want to tell the listeners a little bit about that. It sounds like a great time.
Yes, we're putting on a benefit concert on Saturday, September 16th, and KBOO is a co-sponsor of the concert, which we're very happy about. And it's a benefit for the Rafiki Village Project, and the headliner act will be Portland's own Palante, led by KBOO's own Nick Geffrow, who many of you may know. And opening for Palante will be the Afro Folk Project, led by Jan DeWeese, a longtime local musician with a great deep interest in African rhythms of all kinds. We're going to be serving food and drinks. There'll be a raffle, an auction, a slideshow presentation about the work of the Rafiki Village Project. And yeah, it's going to be great. We're hoping everybody will turn out for that.
So if people want more information about the benefit, where can they go to access that?
Well, on our Facebook page and also our website, which is www.rafikivp.org. And we have a Facebook page, this event listed there as well.
Well, I am about out of questions for you guys, although I really appreciate you coming to talk to me about this. And I feel like I've learned a lot more about Tanzania and a lot more about just how it works to be a local NGO working in the Global South. But if either of you have anything else that you'd like to add, I'm definitely welcome to hearing that.
Well, I have I want to respond to a couple questions that I get a lot when I'm asked about this work.
And sure.
One of the questions that I get asked is, why not just, if you're thinking about helping Tanzania, why not just give to a nonprofit or a larger, more established nonprofit? The example that a lot of people give is Mercy Corps, because they've been doing this work for years and they have, a huge, huge budget. We have just a tiny budget compared to an organization like that. Why not just donate to Mercy Corps? And I think that there's a couple of answers to that question. And one, I think, is the ability of a small organization to donate the higher percentage of the money that we raise to the actual work is greater than Mercy Corps, which has a huge overhead. We're trying to limit our administrative cost to less than 10%. We have no paid staff, so that we are able to really donate almost all the money directly to the work. And that's one reason, but I think even more importantly than that, because we are, we're sort of building relationships in the community, and we have these relationships with the teachers and the parents and the students that are going to school there and the doctors. When you do develop more relationships, building those relationships is actually more important than the buildings that you build. It's even more important than the classrooms and the health clinics. It's establishing those relationships, and we have that ability to do that, whereas Mercy Corps might not. They have a huge turnover in staff, and even if they are working on site, maybe the next year will be a different group of people. So I think that's one of the reasons that I think that small nonprofits have a huge advantage over larger nonprofits.
Well, once again, thank you guys so much for coming in to speak with me. It's been a pleasure, and I've learned a lot more about the Rafiki Village Project and about Tanzania. Great. Thanks again, David and Laura.
Well, thank you so much, Jennifer. It's really been a pleasure.
And I second that. And also, if people have questions for me as the founder or Laura as the secretary, they can send an email to info@RafikiVP.
Great. Thank you so much.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Folk Music Society's monthly concerts beginning Friday, September 15th, at Colonial Heights Presbyterian Church in Portland. The Portland Folk Music Society's monthly concerts will be featuring live folk music every third Friday of the month, beginning September 15th through May. Again, that's Portland Folk Music Society's monthly concerts every third Friday of the month, beginning Friday, September 15th, at Colonial Heights Presbyterian Church, 2828 Southeast Stevens in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now the KBOO News at Noon for Monday, September 11th, 2017, in local news. The Portland Police Department arrested seven protesters in downtown Portland on Sunday.